Hey there, deep divers. We are diving into a story that honestly feels like it could be in the news today, even though it's thousands of years old.
Okay.
It's the story of Joseph and his brothers.
Okay.
Specifically, Genesis chapters 43.15 through 45.28,
Gotcha.
where jealousy and betrayal and ultimately forgiveness play out on an epic scale.
Wow.
But what's so fascinating about this story is that it's not just some ancient family drama.
Okay.
We're talking historical records that actually back up the biblical account.
Interesting.
We're talking insights into ancient Egyptian culture and themes that still echo all the way to today.
It really is incredible how this story has been passed down for generations and generations.
Right.
And it still has this power to move us today.
Totally. And you're so right about the historical context because it just adds this whole other layer of intrigue to the story.
It really does.
So, for example, we're going to be talking about the famine that's described in the book of Genesis.
Right.
And guess what? There's an inscription from the tomb of a guy named Baba. He was a governor in Upper Egypt during that same time period. And his inscription mentions a 7-year famine.
Really?
It's like, whoa, bringing the story to life.
So that's the inscription from the tomb of Baba, the governor of El Kaaba.
Uh-huh.
And what's amazing is how well it lines up with the biblical narrative.
Right.
So this inscription talks about how Baba, during this terrible famine, distributed grain to the city each year.
Interesting.
So it really helps us imagine the challenges that people faced during that time.
Totally.
And it gives us a real-world connection to what we see in Genesis.
It's like you're reading this ancient text, and suddenly there's this evidence right there in front of you.
It's pretty amazing.
And it's not just confirming the famine, it's adding a whole other dimension to the story.
For sure.
Okay, so we've got this historical backdrop.
Yeah.
But at its heart, this is a story about a family that's just torn apart by jealousy and betrayal.
Yeah.
And Joseph doesn't make things easy for his brothers at all.
No, he doesn't.
He puts them through these three seriously intense trials.
You know, you could almost say these trials are like psychological tests.
Oh, interesting.
Designed to kind of force the brothers to look at their past actions and face up to them.
Yeah.
And each trial just ramps up the tension and makes them confront their guilt and whether they've really changed.
It's like he's orchestrating this big play, watching their every move.
It really is.
Trying to see if they've actually learned from their mistakes.
He is.
So tell me, what are these trials that he puts them through?
Well, the first one is imprisonment.
Okay.
He has them locked up for 3 days.
Whoa.
To give them time to think about what they did in the past and what the consequences were.
You know, I can't even imagine being stuck in a foreign country.
Right.
And facing the consequences of something you did years ago.
It's tough.
It's like, whoa, feeling the weight of your past sins.
Yeah, and on top of that,
yeah.
They have no clue who this powerful Egyptian official really is.
So they're terrified.
Completely terrified.
What happens next?
So the second trial involves their youngest brother, Benjamin.
Okay.
Now remember, Joseph was sold into slavery, and his father, Jacob, believes he's dead.
Right.
The pain of that loss was huge.
Of course.
So Joseph, he demands that the brothers bring Benjamin to Egypt as proof that they're being honest.
Oh, man, that is playing with fire.
It is.
You just know their father's going to be a wreck with worry.
Totally.
Especially with what happened with Joseph.
Yeah, he already lost one son.
Exactly.
He's not going to want to lose another.
So this trial is all about their loyalty and their family obligation.
It really is.
It's like, are they willing to risk Benjamin's safety to save themselves?
It's the question, isn't it?
And how are they going to face their father if something happens to Benjamin?
It's a test of their character, for sure.
Totally a test of whether they're willing to protect the most vulnerable among them.
Totally.
It's like he's pushing all their buttons.
He is.
Making them face their deepest fears.
Yes.
Okay, so what's a third trial? What's the thing that finally pushes them over the edge?
So the third trial involves a silver cup, a cup that was used for divination.
Okay.
And this cup gets planted in Benjamin's bag.
Oh, no.
And remember how the brothers stripped Joseph of his coat and sold him into slavery?
Yeah.
This time it's a stolen cup.
Uh-huh.
And Benjamin is the one who gets accused.
Wow.
It's like Joseph is holding up a mirror to them.
Yeah.
Forcing them to face their past.
That is a seriously clever twist.
It is.
He's turning the tables on them completely.
Totally.
So they're feeling the same kind of fear and helplessness that they inflicted on him.
Exactly.
The psychological masterstroke.
It is.
And it sets the stage for one of the most emotional scenes in the whole story. Judah's plea for mercy.
So Judah steps forward And you can just feel the weight of all those years of guilt and regret just pouring out of him.
Yeah.
This isn't the same Judah who was so quick to betray his brother.
Right.
This is a man who's been transformed by loss and responsibility.
You can really sense that shift in his character.
You can.
He's become like the protector, the one who feels responsible for his whole family's fate.
It's all on his shoulders.
So what does he actually say to Joseph? How does he plead for mercy?
But Judah's speech is incredible.
Yeah.
It's like a masterpiece of emotional persuasion.
Wow.
He throws himself on Joseph's mercy,
mm-hmm.
and he offers to become Joseph's slave in Benjamin's place.
Oh, wow.
He talks about their father's grief.
Yeah.
About how he's already lost one son.
Right.
And he just can't bear to lose another.
Oh, man.
He has this powerful appeal to compassion and family bonds.
It's like he's saying, I know what we did was wrong.
Right.
You've been living with that guilt all these years.
Yeah.
Punish me. Take me instead.
Exactly.
Please spare my brother and my father.
Yeah. It's a truly selfless act.
It really is.
And that's the turning point.
Oh, wow.
That act of self-sacrifice, that willingness to put his own life on the line for his family.
Yeah.
That's what finally breaks through Joseph's facade.
I bet.
He can't hold back his emotions any longer.
Right.
He reveals his true identity to his brothers.
Okay, that must have been an absolutely explosive moment.
It was.
All those years of hiding who he was, all that planning and revenge.
Years of it.
It all comes crashing down.
It does.
What was their reaction?
The text says that he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it.
Whoa.
Even Pharaoh's household.
Well, seriously.
It's raw, unrestrained emotion.
You can just imagine the shock.
I know.
The disbelief.
Yeah.
This sudden flood of guilt and relief.
Washing over them.
Talk about a family reunion you'll never forget.
Oh my goodness.
I can't even imagine what they were thinking at that moment.
Me neither.
All those years thinking he was dead.
Right.
And there he is.
Yeah.
Not just alive,
uh-huh.
but like one of the most powerful men in Egypt.
It's mind-blowing.
It must have been completely overwhelming.
It was a whirlwind of emotions for sure.
It must have been.
And notice something.
What's that?
Even in that moment when everything is revealed,
yeah.
Joseph's first question is about his father.
Oh, really?
He asks, is my father still alive?
Wow.
It shows you where his heart is.
Yeah.
Even after everything that's happened.
Right.
He still loves his family.
It's a beautiful detail.
It is.
It really speaks volumes about his character.
Totally.
He's achieved all this power and status,
uh-huh.
but his family is what matters most.
In the end of the day, yeah.
Okay, so he reveals himself, and then what happens?
Yeah.
Do they all just hug and live happily ever after?
Well, not quite.
Oh.
Remember, they're still in Egypt.
Right.
And there's this famine going on.
Yeah.
Joseph uses his position as vizier to have his family move to Egypt.
Okay.
And he settles them in a region called Goshen.
Goshen, that sounds familiar.
It does.
Didn't we talk about that earlier?
We did.
What's so special about Goshen?
Well, Goshen was this really fertile region in the Nile Delta.
Okay.
It was perfect for grazing livestock and agriculture.
Oh, wow. So prime real estate in ancient Egypt.
Yeah, you could say that.
And it was strategically important too, right?
Yes.
Close to Avaris, the Hyksos capital.
Exactly.
Wait, Avaris. Yeah. Wasn't that a really important city?
It was a major power center.
Like a huge deal.
Yeah, with connections to the Minoan civilization.
Oh, wow.
And remember, the Hyksos were foreigners themselves.
Oh, right.
They had conquered parts of Egypt.
Yep.
So you have Joseph,
yeah,
a foreigner who rises to power in this foreign dynasty.
Right.
And he settles his family in the heart of that dynasty's territory.
It's like he's bringing them into the inner circle of power.
It really is.
It shows how much influence he has.
Totally.
And how much Pharaoh trusts him.
For sure.
But this move to Egypt, it wasn't just about escaping the famine, was it?
No, it wasn't.
It had these deeper implications for their future.
Yes, we are.
Huge implications.
This move to Egypt is a pivotal moment in their history.
Wow.
It marks the end of the patriarchal era in Canaan.
Mm-hmm.
And the beginning of a whole new chapter for Jacob's descendants. In fact, when the brothers go back to Canaan to tell their father the news.
Yeah.
The text calls them the sons of Israel.
The sons of Israel. That's interesting.
It is, isn't it?
It's like their identity is changing.
Exactly. It's evolving.
Yeah.
It foreshadows the creation of the 12 tribes of Israel.
Oh, wow.
Who eventually become the nation of Israel.
And this all happens while they're in Egypt?
Yes. In a foreign land.
It makes you think about all the journeys we take.
It does.
Not just physically, but emotionally.
Yeah.
And how those journeys shape who we become.
Totally.
So they pack up their stuff, say goodbye to their homeland, and head to Egypt for a fresh start.
A new beginning.
I imagine that must have been bittersweet.
Oh, it was.
Leaving the land of their ancestors.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been easy.
There must have been grief, uncertainty.
For sure.
A sense of loss.
Yeah.
But also hope for a better future.
Right.
It's like this theme that runs through all of history. Definitely. The experience of migration, the challenges of adjusting to a new culture.
Absolutely.
They're leaving behind part of their history, part of their identity.
Yeah.
But they're also carrying with them this promise of survival and a new beginning.
It's true.
It's like sometimes you have to let go to grow and transform.
You do.
Okay, so they get to Egypt. They settle in Goshen.
Uh-huh.
What's Jacob's reaction when he finally sees his beloved son, Joseph, after all these years?
Well, imagine getting news that your son, who you thought was dead for years, is not only alive, but is the second most powerful man in all of Egypt.
Oh, my goodness.
It's enough to make anyone's head spin.
For sure.
The text tells us that Jacob was stunned.
Yeah.
His spirit was revived.
Wow.
He needed to see it to believe it.
It's almost like he had mourned Joseph, accepted his death, and now he has to go through that grief all over again.
Right.
But this time with the joy of his son's return.
What a roller coaster of emotions.
It really is.
And you can practically hear the relief in Jacob's voice when he says, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die."
He doesn't care about wealth or status anymore.
Yeah.
All that matters is seeing his son.
Exactly.
That's so powerful.
It is.
It's like his whole world has shifted.
Yeah.
Family is his true treasure.
It is.
The thing he values most.
Above all else.
There's such beauty in that transformation.
There is.
It reminds you that even when you go through a ton of loss and hardship, love can survive and even win.
It can.
And you know something else?
What's that?
Clothing plays a big role in this story.
Oh, it does.
Think about Joseph's famous coat of many colors.
Right.
A symbol of his father's favoritism.
Uh-huh.
That just fueled his brother's jealousy.
Totally. And then there's the scene with Potiphar's wife when she tries to seduce Joseph and uses his torn tunic as false evidence against him.
It's a dark twist.
It is.
It's like a symbol of betrayal and manipulation.
Exactly. Clothing becomes this language.
Wow.
This powerful visual language that reflects these changing relationships and power dynamics.
And then when Joseph reveals himself to his brothers.
Yes.
He weeps openly, showing how vulnerable he feels.
He does.
And then later he gives them new clothes.
He does.
Like he's forgiving them and accepting them.
It's a beautiful act.
It's like he's replacing those clothes of betrayal with clothes of love and reconciliation.
It's about healing and restoration.
But even with this happy reunion, there are still some issues, aren't there?
There are.
I mean, how can they really trust each other after what happened?
It's a good question.
They did something awful to him.
They did.
It's hard to believe that trust and forgiveness could come back that easily.
It would be tough.
So how does that fear show up?
Yeah. Well, what happens? That brings those anxieties to the surface. Well, the text actually talks about this fear later on.
Okay.
After Jacob dies, the brothers start to get anxious.
Uh-huh.
Thinking that now that their father's gone, Joseph might finally get his revenge.
Like that shadow from their past just keeps hanging over them.
It does.
Even after all this time.
Yeah.
They just can't shake that feeling of guilt and that fear that he might come after them.
They're afraid.
So what do they do?
Well, do they confront Joseph? They do.
Oh, wait.
They go to him all scared and trembling.
Wow.
Basically saying, "Look, we know we messed up bad. Please, for our father's sake, forgive us."
It's like they're laying it all out there.
They are.
Totally vulnerable.
Yeah, showing how desperate they are for his forgiveness.
Okay, so that must have been so intense.
It was.
What does Joseph do?
What?
Does he finally unleash all that anger and resentment?
His response is really something. Oh. It's both surprising and really moving.
So what does he say?
He starts to weep again.
Oh, wow.
And he says to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives."
Whoa. Those are some powerful words.
They are?
He's not ignoring what they did.
Yeah.
Or pretending it didn't hurt.
Not at all.
But he's choosing to see the bigger picture.
He is.
The good that came out of this horrible situation.
Exactly. It's a deep statement about forgiveness.
It is.
About understanding that even the worst things can be part of a larger plan.
Yeah.
A plan for something good and meaningful.
And it shows how strong Joseph's faith is.
Oh, yeah.
He understands that God is in control, working through people to make his plan happen. It's like sometimes what we see as bad or even tragic can actually lead to something good.
Right.
Something we never would have expected.
It's true.
And it shows how much Joseph can forgive. He's able to let go of his own pain and see that God is at work.
And it makes us think, how do we look at people who have hurt us?
Right.
Can we try to understand them?
Yeah.
Can we believe that they can change?
Tough questions.
They are.
And let's not forget about those prophetic dreams.
Oh, yeah. Those dreams are so important.
They run through the whole story.
They do.
They're like clues pointing to Joseph's destiny and to God's plan. It's like those early dreams where he sees those sheaves of grain bowing down to his sheaf.
Right.
His brothers were furious.
They were.
But it also showed that he would rise to power.
Exactly. And then that other dream.
Yeah.
Where the sun and moon and 11 stars bow down to him.
Right.
That connects Joseph's future to his whole family's future.
It's like those dreams are a secret code.
They are.
Revealing a future that even Joseph doesn't understand at first.
They add this element of divine intervention to the story.
Oh, interesting.
It's not just ambition or cleverness that gets Joseph to where he is.
Right.
It's God.
Guiding everything.
Towards a specific goal.
And that goal is to save Jacob's family. And to continue that covenant lineage, which leads to the nation of Israel.
It's a story that stretches across generations.
It does.
Connecting the past and present and future.
In a way that's just so profound.
It's deeply moving.
So we have all this historical and cultural stuff, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But what makes this story really last are those universal themes.
Right.
Like sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
Betrayal. Forgiveness.
Yes.
Reconciliation. These are things that we all relate to, no matter who we are or what we believe. It reminds us that even in the worst times, there's always hope.
There is.
A chance for things to get better.
Always a possibility of healing.
And that even the most painful things can become something good.
They can.
Something with meaning and purpose.
And for everyone listening,
I
encourage you to go back to the source material.
Absolutely.
Reread those chapters and verses we talked about.
You might find some things you didn't see before and make some personal connections.
It's amazing what you can find when you really dig deep.
This has been an incredible deep dive.
It has.
So many historical insights, psychological twists and turns, and spiritual depth.
I'm leaving with a whole new understanding of the story of Joseph and his brothers.
Me too. It's a story that keeps giving.
It does.
Every time you come back to it, there's something new to discover.
And for all you deep divers out there,
keep
exploring, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep into the world of knowledge.